Love the mess, I watch the swirls.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOCO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is Sunday, December 20th, 2020. I'm Larry Rhodes, or Doubter 5, and we have our co-host Wombat on the phone with us. Hello, Wombat.
I want to be the very best.
And you are, Wombat. You really
Thank you.
Are. Our guests today are Doubtfire, Boudreaux, George 1, George 2, Brooklyn and Buffalo. Hello, Georges. Both nice. Originally from New York. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. This particular time, we'll be talking about the war on Christmas.
Nice.
If you get the feeling you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are several atheist, free-thinking, and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and we'll be telling you how you can connect with them right after the mid-show breaks. Also, did you know that there was a streaming atheist call-in video show broadcasting here in Knoxville and has been for 10 years? Did you know that, Wombat?
I've been a fan of it since I was a child, and really, I haven't really been paying attention to the show that much, but I have been playing the video game
since you were a child.
Once every 2 years. Every
it's
once
only
every
been
two
on
years.
10
My favorite's
years.
Red. Sun and Moon just came out. Love that. And I have like a level 100 Charmander. I know. Really enjoy the cute little fire on the tail. It's great.
Just
it's
keep
really
it,
wonderful.
Keep flipping those channels. You'll find it eventually. But we'll tell you more how you can find it after the mid-show break. And if you'd like to interact with us during the show, go to Facebook and search for Digital Free Thought Radio Hour and use the messaging function to send us questions or comments during the show. Wombat, what do we have today?
Ho, ho, ho. Mary, what are we going to do about Christmas, guys? So like we decided, you know, every year a bunch of atheists get together in a round table and figure out what we can do against Christmas. We got to do the war against Christmas, do whatever we can to make sure no one ever celebrates Christmas ever again.
The Grinch couldn't join us today, but we'll try to work with that.
We'll share our video out for the world to take notes on and then see how we like succeed this year, if any year. Obviously, we're going to be talking about like what are we doing as atheists talking about the holidays and what are our plans for Christmas or the holiday season in general. Buffalo George, I want to know everything about you. You're the new face for the show, and actually not too new of a face for me. Would you mind telling us about where you are, where you're coming from, who you are, all that stuff?
Well, I'm in outside of Lexington, Kentucky, about 15 miles outside, sort of in the country. And what I've been doing lately is more walking in the woods and enjoying my religion, which is nature.
And nice.
In my cathedral, which is the woods. And fortunately, we have a neighbor, a very friendly neighbor, who has a 300-acre free-range cattle farm, and we're permitted to walk there freely. And my wife and I do that at least once a day, sometimes more than that. So that's about the only thing I've been doing lately that's noteworthy.
Relations to any of these people on the show? Like, who brought you here? What's going on here?
Well, there's Eric there, who's my great son-in-law, and and the host of the summit group, which I expect you know about. And I enjoy the topic. I enjoy pursuing these questions about religion. Used to be, born and raised in a religious situation, Catholic in my case, but started asking questions in my early 20s I'm a scientist, so reason makes sense to me, and it always has. So that's where I'm coming from.
Okay, very cool. And then we'll round it off with my best friend, Larry. How you doing?
Doing well. Staying in, staying safe. the whole country is really baking in this COVID right now. And half of the highest cities that are experiencing the worst situations in COVID are in Tennessee. We're just not taking it seriously as a population, and we're paying the price. So
absolutely,
just trying to stay in, keep the spirits up.
Yeah, as a country, we are doing so bad. Like we're getting detention, and we're on the borderline of getting expelled. But like, I just hope you know, we can learn from this because we need to start. We're talking about the holidays today, guys. I am excited because, like Eric or Boudreaux, excuse me, like Boudreaux, our good friend Boudreaux, I'm also off work and I have time now to reflect on a really, really crazy year, but also be find time to be thankful for just a moment of reprieve because we had been working nonstop since February trying to make face mask material for like all of Tennessee. And like, finally, it's like, okay, we hit all of our, you know, deadlines. And now it's just like, whoo, what can we do now? And I think what made me feel really happy is I came to work or I came home last Friday and there was a little package on my doorknob. And it was one of my neighbors who gave me like a box of cookies and cat toys for my cat. And I'm like, man, this is cool. Like, you know how it's crazy? It's just been working home, but there's other people out there and they were considering for me. And it's like, now it's time for me to think about like, oh, what kind of gift can I return for this? What can I do for my neighbors? And still stay socially distant, but like also appreciate the fact that I am living in a community that's like very positive and supportive of me. And I think that's what this holiday season's like for me. That's how I celebrate my holidays. Just like, what can I do back for my friends and family, my neighbors who I love, and I want them to come back with love at me. I want to do a roundtable discussion on like, what are you guys doing to destroy Christmas? Because that's what I'm doing to destroy Christmas. Being nice to people and loving and sharing reciprocity and all that stuff, calling my family. That's how you destroy Christmas. Let's go to Scott. Scott, how are you going to destroy Christmas? What's your war on Christmas?
Oh, I'm just going to, you know, try to be as positive as I can and try to be as loving as I can and take your advice and example. And yeah, that should really make people angry, I guess.
Yeah, yeah, that'll make them real. That'll show them what's up. That'll show them what's up.
That's right.
So, you know, you're really interesting because my mom is Jehovah's Witness. And even yesterday she was texting me and like, so what do you want for Christmas? And I'm like reminding her, it's like, Mom, you don't celebrate Christmas. Like, I want to give you a gift anyway. But you can't be a cheating Jehovah's Witness when there's only 14,000 people that are going to heaven, right? Yeah. You got to like try to get on the A-list at least. Yeah. But, you know, I've gotten very used to not being overzealous with my celebrations. Are you in more or less in the same boat?
Scott? Yeah, I, you know, if I'm really honest, because I, you know, since I was a Jehovah's Witnesses, Christmas and these holidays were never, they were kind of weeded out of my life way back when I was. So coming out of it, I never like ran back to Christmas or ran back to celebrating these holidays, so to speak, because it was never an emotional anchor for me to begin with. So I don't know. It is what it is. And I kind of understand why people get emotional and they get really, it's really important for them.
Sure.
And so, but you know, if I'm an atheist, I don't care. Like, you do you, you know, I'll do me, live and let live. But there, it's nice to have a time of day set aside to be especially nice to each other and this and that. So I don't have a problem with it, and I play along with it. I just don't go overzealous about it. Like, right. I don't have Christmas trees and stuff like that. Not that that's overzealous, but I don't even get that far with it. So
sure. It is what it is. Like, it won't look like Christmas in New York in my house. I do have like a plant that I put some tinsel around and stuff, but you know, that's more or less as far as I'm about to go to. I'm more or less in the same boat. But I also like the idea of like, hey, you can celebrate it. If you can go crazy. If you want to go crazy, I'll support you if you want to go crazy. I'm just like, I just don't have the energy to do that
right.
myself, right? Yeah. I have the same question for Brooklyn, George. You were raised atheist, but you do have a Jewish background. So like,
that's correct, yes.
Is Hanukkah more like the appropriate analogy here for you?
It is not, you see, because now you heard it here first, so I'm going to say it. In the Jewish context, Hanukkah is not a really big time holiday. So, okay. And the irony, and you know, the way I was brought up is that every year or two, so and so, my parents would get a Christmas tree. and put presents under it, you know?
Sure.
Which is funny because, you know, it's not in my background. It's not in their tradition. It's, you know, but they would do it. So it's like there's a Christmas spirit of some kind. And it's a sort of an American thing because Christians are the majority of Americans. And all these people are doing all this stuff. So can I get with it? Well, yeah, but no, you know. And it's sort of a strange place to be. And sometimes I just wish the whole thing would go away, you know, blow over. But I bought myself some presents. I bought myself some goodies online.
I have bought myself some presents, too. What's the best thing you got for yourself? Just going to ask this real quick.
Well, I got some computer stuff. Believe it or not, the best thing I got was a tire pump.
Oh, hey, I got a tire pump too. Hey, small world. I totally did. I got one that looks like a drill. It looks super, super cool. I'm just because the last one I had broke. When I had three flat tires, the only one that I had broke when I had three flats because I thought it worked, but instead I was blowing air out of my tires. So I heard the hiss, but I wasn't looking at the tire pressure. And I'm like, this works. Third tire, second tire. This works. Third tire. This works. It's not working. Why is my tire? Why is my whole car careening to one side? I'm like, oh man.
Well, unlike a lot of people, I have to live with something before I know whether I want it or not, or whether it's any good or not. You know, and sometimes I just have to buy something. It's like I'm scientific. I want to know how it works, and. You know, so that's what's behind my having bought a number of things in my life is just curiosity.
Yeah, you have to live with something to know what it's like. And that's sort of like Scott's situation where it's like I never really had the in your face traditional green and red and silver and gold Christmas. So like lacking it, I don't feel like I'm really missing anything. And like from my perspective, I had really, really Christian Christmases and then the low key, hey man, just do what you got to do. Here's a present. Have fun. Here's your Amazon account and your own credit card. Get whatever, you want. And I'm like, I kind of like the second one better. Though, like, the main thing for me, it was just like hanging out with family, not so much like the purchase and the in your face commercial and the terrible terrible Christmas music that comes out each new year. Some new country star figured out a new rendition of Silent Night and I have to listen to him belt it out over the FM every day. It's like,
and you know what? A lot of that Christmas music was written by Jewish people.
Mm-hmm. Hey, yeah. Nice.
Yeah. And you know, the story behind Irving Berlin's writing, his famous Christmas song, right?
What, no, throw it at us.
Because he was Jew, living in Brooklyn and he wanted to express his Christmas cheer, but not have it be in a Christian sense. So if you listen to the lyrics of White Christmas, you can see that coming right out.
Sure.
Whoa.
There's a lot of secular attributes of Christmas that are non-religious. Now, Santa Claus is a good example of that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Originally came from St. Nick, but now it's just like this mascot that's like so generally appealing for everybody.
Right.
And like you sucked all
but
the
no religious overlays at all.
Exactly. And I think that's cool.
Was St. Nick based on a real saint?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who gave out oranges and was not fat or
like, yeah.
You know, the original Saint Nick was kind of a gangster. He would go down. So I guess back then it was okay, but he really liked giving away oranges to the point where he would like throw them into people's homes. Like that would be his thing. He'd go down the street, pull out a sock full of oranges and throw it into people's homes. Like, hey, be with God. And people would be like, did that guy just throw an orange in my house? Yeah. What the hell? But back then it was like, oh, oranges. Oh, it's better than
or tomatoes.
Yeah.
In order to give away oranges, you got to get the oranges in the first place. Where the hell did he get oranges in the middle of the winter?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I guess it was like one of those things where you're just like, hey, one, it's food. Two, it's exotic. You know, like I'm not going to complain against this. So,
but he had to get them.
The trade routes.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, we're going to Buffalo George. George, I want to know, like, what are your plans for this Christmas? And what's your plans for destroying it?
Ah, I guess I've never thought very much about destroying it, but
well, I mean, that's what you invited here for, right?
I like the happiness that comes out of it, especially the way in which the kids view it. And so a lot of my focus is on doing that. And I enjoyed buying gifts online this year for the grandkids, really.
How do you buy kids gifts? I have no idea what even high schoolers like these days.
You find out from their parents what they sort of like, need, and then you try to take that in with what you think you'd enjoy giving them.
Now, here's the thing: the parents are going to tell you like they need socks, they need underwear, and you're like,
yeah, but what kind of socks? What kind of socks?
They don't want socks. They never want socks. They never.
Especially girls, you know, they have special likes and dislikes when it comes to socks, and so you can work on that, and it works.
Okay.
You go to the internet and you say crazy socks, and you get all kinds of possibilities.
Okay.
Christmas to me is something that a lot of people enjoy, and especially in a time like this, and in the dull winter days when the sun's not shining brightly. True. I just kind of like it.
I think Christmas as a grandparent, right, is way more fun than like Christmas as an adult that's already just grown up. Right. Like, that's the boat I'm in. I'm like, I'm about to get out of that boat, but I'm still in the boat of just like, hey, I just barely grew up. Yeah. And so it's just like, OK, I can buy whatever I want. What's the big deal? But when you think about like, oh, but I can buy kids whatever they want and I don't have to raise them.
I can send them home.
It's like, oh, well, then here, have four Nintendo Switches. I got dispensable income. I don't care. That's your parents' problem. I want to be the rock star. Yeah.
So this year we can go one step further with that. You know, you can buy them stocking stuffers, and you can take the stockings and put them on their front porch in a box and get back in your car and go home.
Very cool. You could be like literal Secret Santa, basically.
Then you have a Zoom where everyone opens their stockings together. So that works.
That's super, super sweet. That's sweet. Okay, cool. Hey, Boudreaux, I got some Star Wars info for you. But of course, I want to know what your holiday plans are. And then we can go straight into that. What is your means of destroying Christmas?
Well, I plan to, you know, do the usual, eat babies and all that, and sing Satan songs and the fun stuff. But no, for me, Chris, my mom is just she's a giver. She's a spender. She loves to spoil people. And she spoiled us as kids so much that I was left with Christmas to me was way too many presents, loving it. Like, just as a kid, We always got way too much, and I loved it. As you know, it was Star Wars things and Lego, G.I. Joe, all of it.
What would you think about Star Wars, Boudreaux? Have you ever considered that?
No.
If it didn't exist, what would you be right now? It's just like, you'd be an accountant somewhere on like Tuscany or something like that.
Probably be a Star Trek fan. Oh my God.
Oh, the shame. Okay.
So I don't, I carried that, the memories of that, into my being a parent. And you know, I love spoiling. You know, Kristen gets mad at me. Kristen's George's daughter, and she gets mad at me because I want to spend way too much on the kids, and so I usually have a few surprises for them to open that even mom doesn't know about. I don't know, it's a great time of year. Outside of religion completely, to me it's about giving, you know. That's
nice. Yeah. So, and spending time with family too, I think, really. Yeah. Or however you can, right? In these times, right?
Right.
I will ask this one weird question before we move up to Doubter 5. But like, I know in your heart you want your kids to be able to play as many musical instruments as possible, right? Like, what is the temptation to buy them instruments that secretly you want? And being like, but it's for the kids. They'll be able to play it by the time they grow up to be able to hold this giant jumbo guitar. It'll be an heirloom. So like, really, it's a double gift, really, when you think about it. Like, how do you manage that? And is there a conversation with Kristen to like even things out? Just like, no, you can't get them for giant metal flying V's. That's not going to count.
that one's tough because the Vivian started with piano, which Kristen played. plays, and now she's on flute, which none of us play. So, you know, I've got guitars and drums and everything bass down here, but they haven't really taken an interest in it. If they show an interest in it, yeah, believe me, I'm going to get a, right here, this is for the kid. It's this, this Les Paul custom.
Yeah. Okay.
Silverburst. Just yeah. Happens to be Silverburst. Yeah.
So. It has a beer dispenser, but trust me, I'm not going to let them try it until they're 21.
Right.
Okay. Dad or Five, mind give us a walkthrough about your Christmas plans for destroying the holidays?
Oh, it's simple. If somebody says Merry Christmas to me, I say Merry Christmas back. If they say Happy Hanukkah to me, I say Happy Hanukkah back. If they say Happy Devious. Holidays, I say Happy Holidays back. It's you know, straightforward and it gets to the point and doesn't piss off
brilliant.
Anybody. Well, the thing about it is,
brilliant, if brilliant. They say that's the master plan.
Hanukkah to me, I know that they're celebrating Hanukkah and I wish them a happy Hanukkah.
Yeah, you know, it's no skin off your back.
Right, I don't care. But one thing that we do a little different here is we put lights up around the living room, not specifically on the tree, but around, you know, on the curtains, the entertainment system. And from last year to this year, we left them on the curtain all year long and really enjoyed them. So we may do that, you know, just continuing on going forward. But yeah, really nice effect.
It is always kind of sad when you have to put away the Christmas decorations. Mm-hmm. In the back of your head, you're like, but I live here and I'm not hurting anyone if I keep them up. So like, what's going on here? It's like, I know it's a custom, but I like the way this looks.
Right.
I do have family that's Muslim. And when it's Ramadan, I'll be like, hey, happy Eid. Happy, you know, Eid Mubarak or whatever. And they're like, yeah. I've done that at grocery stores when it's like around Ramadan time. And then people will be like, yeah, Eid Mubarak. And then someone will go like, are you Muslims? Like, no, I'm an atheist. Like, oh, well, that's weird. For the most part, they just enjoy that someone else is like recognized appreciating it. Yeah. Them. The weirdest thing, I'll say this before we go to our break, is when I used to do Socratic examinations up in Kentucky, there was a walking path at the University of Kentucky, and there would be a lady who would always be out when I was out, and she'd wear like all black, and she'd be in the full hijab. Is that the right term for it? Anyway, when she walked past me, I'd be like, hey, Eid Mubarak, and she would respond back as customary with like this 10, like with the full on 10 line Islamic slogan. That's just like, but like happy and smiling. And I'm like, I don't know what any of these words mean, but I know she's like, hey, thank you very much. And you have a happy holidays too. Bless you and all that stuff. I'm like, all right, awesome. That's cool with me. But she would like remember me. And like every single time she see me, just like straight out, like, oh, no, no. It was like, oh, cool. It's that same word again. Anyway. What I'm saying is like it's no skin off my back to improve her cheer and her holiday cheer. Mm-hmm. And so it's just cool to dial into that and make things better generally as a world and more accepting and all that stuff. So I love that. Larry, we're at the bottom of the half hour. Can you believe it already?
Oh no. Can it be?
Yeah.
Well, this is the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We'll be right back after this short break.
Some songs are happy, and some songs are sad. Some songs are really well rehearsed, and other songs are bad. Well, some songs are angry, and some songs are sweet. Some songs are made to help you wake up in the morning. Well, here's a little song to help you go back to sleep. There isn't any God, and when you die, you're just dead. And heaven's just a fairy tale to put you to bed. Sometimes I think about the chance that I'm wrong, and then I close my eyes and just remember this song. I said, there isn't any God, and when you die, you're just dead. And heaven's just a fairy tale to put you to bed.
There ain't nobody watching us, cause nobody cares. And in the end, we're living all alone. If I could live forever, I'd do it if I could. Leave it all behind, everything that I've done. It's just as bad as if it never begun. And if I was a believer, and Lord knows I've tried, well, I could be at peace when I close my eyes, and I can go to heaven on the day that I die.
Hello, and welcome back to the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LP FM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. I'm Daughter Five, and today is Sunday, December 20th, 2020. Now let's talk about the atheist free thought groups that you can join here in Knoxville. First, there's the Atheist Society of Knoxville, founded in 2002. We're in our 18th year. ASK has over 1,000 members, and you can find us online at knoxvilleatheist.org, or you can go directly to Meetup or even Google and search for Knoxville Atheists. It's just that simple. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one. Start one.
Start one.
That's right. Another large free-thinking group here in Knoxville are the Rationalists of East Tennessee. Just go to rationalist.org and click on upcoming events to find out what they're up to. Earlier in the show, we said we'd talk about the Atheist Free Thought video show here in Knoxville. It's called
Free Thinkers. Wait, there's this Atheist TV show? You need to tell me about this, man.
It's been going on for a little while. You can go to, it's on YouTube right now. It used to be on a local access TV. But go to YouTube and search for Free Thinkers United Coalition of Knoxville for the new live versions. If you want to see our archives, search for Free Thought Forum Knoxville. And remember, you can find YouTube, pretty much all of their 10 years that they put up there. Also, if you're interested in getting involved with the TV or the radio show, just come to an Ask Meetup or RET meeting and talk to us about it. Or, of course, with COVID going on, you really can't come to the meetings, but you can find us on YouTube or Facebook and leave us a comment. With us on the show today, we have Doubtfire, George, Buffalo, Boudreaux, and, of course, regular co-host Ty Wombat.
Squirtle.
Where do you want to pick up, Wombat?
So we just came back from the commercial break, and now it's time for everyone's favorite game. Who's that Pokemon? Oh, no. Hey. There's no Pokemon here. Where'd it go? Where is it? Where's the love? The love. Buffalo George is like, I have no idea what...
Right.
I have no idea. What's happening? Sorry about that. So we have a segment of the show where we go over listener feedback from last week's episode. Last week's episode, of course, was Logic Can't Prove Anything. And we actually had a really cool conversation about the nature and limitations of logic. It's a great thing to come up with for proofs, but it's not a really adequate means to prove anything. If anything, it's about anything. Like, the only thing that we can be certain about is uncertainty. And so it inspired a lot of really interesting comments in that video, and we're going to go over them today. So Dada's Trading Room, all the way from Poland, says logic can lead to evidence, and evidence does lead to proof, but we can't prove. It's proving is a lot harder. He also follows up with a belief, a claim, or a model of reality. Oh, wow. He really, really well defines his terms with like some a very good definition. But basically, he came up with a defense for saying like, hey, logic is a good way to lead to evidence. And evidence does lead to proof, but that's a different thing to prove with a V something. And I thought that was really interesting. What do you think about that, Buffalo George? Do you think you can prove something with logic?
Can you, I don't care.
Buffalo George. Brooklyn. I'm walking over here. What are you doing?
I'm a scientist, and the main thing I have been for my entire career. What I've come to learn the most is that we never know everything about anything. And so maybe that's an answer to your question. Can you prove anything? And I'm not so sure you can, but you can conclude certainly and logic leads to conclusion. And that's the way I operate. I don't believe anything really. I conclude with the best evidence I can gather.
Can I poke at that? I would say like you don't believe anything with absolute certainty, but there are obviously things that you are convinced are true, even with your own infallibilities. Would you say that's more accurate, or would you have a issue with that?
I'd have an issue with that.
Talk to me.
Well, for example, the example I usually use is that, you know, gravity is the most obvious thing to just about anybody that thinks about it, and we don't understand gravity.
Okay.
You know, science does not understand the basis of gravity, and you can apply that to almost anything. The properties of water, for example, there are still some properties of water that are not understood. So I don't think we have to. And as an experimentalist, I depend upon experimentation to arrive at my conclusions whenever I can. And so we have to just do the best we can and advance the understanding in that way.
Okay, I'm going to throw this out again. I'll massage my words a little differently. We don't have an absolute idea about anything, but we at least have working conclusions about how things operate, where we can like still, you know the consequences of our actions and interact with things in a beneficial way for mutual benefit. Is that something you
agree working with? I like working conclusions.
Working conclusions. Larry, what'd you think? You had your hand up. What's up?
Yes, I was having a conversation with someone recently. They were saying that I was saying that absolute certainty is overrated. And they said, well, science was always absolutely sure about their facts. And I told them, no. Matter of fact, we reserve our highest rewards and most prestigious rewards for those who can overturn our previous assumptions with new information. I mean, we don't assume absolute certainty over what our discoveries are.
So I like
credibility.
Yeah, I like that. I like the idea of like, hey, you know, science is about rewarding people who overturn science, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like this is science is inherently a pursuit to figure out why the last guy who said something was wrong, which is sort of, go for it.
Yeah,
and the method is retested.
And if something that science says is overturned, it's only overturned by more science, not by religious claims.
Yeah. There's an unfortunate conflation between, well, you just trust science, but science is what you use to correct science. So how do you know? So if you can't trust science, even test this whole system? But really, science is what is knowledge. Like it is not just something that's on the shelf of knowledge. It is the shelf.
And
so
the method,
like all of our, and we break it down to different methods. Sure. But like there's a lot of observations there. So there's some empirical studies. There's philosophy. There's mathematics where you just have incredibly well-defined terms. It's a big shelf of knowledge. And we can't throw that out, but we can add to it. And it tends to be that when we use this shelf of stuff, it leads us to the best conclusions. And I think demonstrably, that makes it the best method to come to conclusions. And we can always improve it and we can take stuff off the shelf. We're willing to adapt it. Is it at the best where it's at right now? No. But can we keep improving it? Yes. And that's what makes it better than a strict dogma that doesn't change, that assumes that it knows everything. Boudreaux, I'm going to throw a question out at you. You know, we talked about this last week, but like the idea of like, can you prove, Ecocentric Homestead asked, I'm not aware of any logical arguments for the existence of God because I think they're all philosophical, not logical. In your head, is there a difference between philosophy and logic? Like
that's a
philosophical argument versus a logical argument. Boudreaux, what do you think?
So I think I've said before on the podcast that one of my big regrets in my education in college, I never took a philosophy class. And I kind of kicked myself because I feel like I'm missing a lot of the pieces and maybe to help the pieces would be needed to help answer this question properly. But to me, you know, philosophy, you know, it's thinking about thinking, talking about, you know, how these thoughts are put together. So logic certainly comes in there. But I don't know. I guess my experience with logic is more on George's side of thing, more scientific, more testable, you know, things you can, but I mean, I think you can use a lot of the same tools in philosophy, like, you know, logical fallacies and, you know, cause you don't control what you understand in your head, right? You know, someone makes an argument and it clicks and you're like, yeah, I get it. Oh, that makes sense. I agree. But you're not really in control of that, especially if you know my thoughts on free will. So
really, don't get them started. Anybody, so let them keep talking.
it really just comes down to, you got to put the words in the right order, whether that's logically or using the right terminology to make it just click for that person to say, oh yeah, I get it. Anyway, so I don't know if that answers it.
George, I'll have you give the follow up. What do you think?
Bail me out, George.
When I was in college, I only took one philosophy course. And I'm aware there are different branches to the discipline of philosophy. Notice I just called it a discipline, because the way what I picked up was that it was very much about logic. In my one semester of philosophy.
No, I think it's all based on logic. I mean, I think the underpinnings of all good philosophy would be logic. It's the tools of philosophy and science. You can't really make any headway without it. One of the problems I have with philosophy is that Descartes started off, you know, with the most foundational logical conclusion that you can reach. We think, therefore, we exist. Or I do. I don't know about you guys. I can't prove it.
but, throw us under the bus.
But other than that, after he made that conclusion, he went off into Never Land spiritual beings and other realms that are not conclusive and not logical, if you ask me. But that's just me.
Yeah, it seems like the best philosophy are the ones that cohere with logical entailments and stuff like that. Like,
yes.
Epistemology. Like, that's a branch of philosophy, but it's asking, how do you know things? And it usually appeals to logic. If how you know something isn't logical, then it opens up a bunch of questions like, well, how do you know if it's not logical, if it doesn't, you know? And then there's other things like concreteness versus imaginary things. Like, how do we tell the difference between imagination and the concrete? Like, logic is a mental conceptual in the category of imagination. That's what logic is. It's in your mind. But then if it coheres with the concrete or something we can actually point to in reality, then it makes a better philosophical argument. It's more sound versus just a valid conception.
That is incredibly well said. I love that. I love, like, it was like, I like philosophy is better when it's rooted in logic, like it's enriched with logic. You can have sophistry, which I think, in my opinion, is philosophy logic. It's just like, this guy's just talking. That's your Jordan B. Peterson. That's your, like, guys who are like, and the crystal came from the mouth of the mammoth. It's like, oh, this guy's just talking. Yeah. That's just a person speaking.
Word salad.
Yeah,
but when you get like a doctorate, you get something called a PhD, which is a doctor of philosophy. Like, that is a person who's studying very hard in the logistics and the logic and, like, the technical aspects of a field of science, to the point where it's like, ah, good job, dude. Good job. Or good job.
And that's
lady.
Also why we have
good
peer
job,
review.
Whatever else in between.
Well, sure. Exactly. There can be PhDs out there that issue word salad, but the proof is peer review. Right. You know, of his ideas.
I love it. And I love the peer review. Go for it.
The big component here is this person or that person versus lots of people whose expertise goes way beyond themselves. And that's one thing I find very appealing about science, is it's really an accumulation of knowledge. It's not a Nobel Prize winner here or the other Nobel Prize winner there. When I think of logic, that's my definition of logic. It has to come from many heads.
Ooh, otherwise, it's a team pursuit.
Yeah.
But to Ty's point, though, you know, you get someone who is good at the word salad, right? You know, the Jordan Peterson was an example. They're kind of like a preacher in a sense, where they're convincing, right? They get on the stage and they they say these things, and again, it comes back to, it clicks into people's heads. So
charismatic,
even though they're not peer reviewed, and it's not like you don't take the words and parse them out and exactly examine. I mean, some people do, but it doesn't matter because they've got, you know, a million followers on YouTube, and they're they're changing people's minds. So I don't know. I don't know how you combat that or fix it or improve it
with logic.
That's a,
an education
with logic and education. What you, I, my opinion would be like the whole purpose of college, in my opinion, at least should be, is to improve your critical thinking prowess and be able to parse bad information from good information. Not be able to say this is the good information I'm always keeping with myself and this is the bad, but be able to have the process to be able to distinguish the two. Mm-hmm. And that only comes through rigorous study, where you are sent out into a field with us, being asked to solve something that your professors can't figure out or whatever. And it's like, I have all these, you know, journals that I could read information from. Some are higher rated than others. Some are from authors who are just really popular in the field and maybe have less standards in terms of like, oh, but if we get this article from this professor, maybe our journal looks better, et cetera. So like, you need to be able to see like, this is good information. This is a good test. This was done rigorously. This is a comprehensive analysis. This is not. This is just pop science. This is just a nice picture, but there's no weight behind it. And I feel like those people who train themselves that way, and anyone can be trained that way, are the best kinds of mindsets for getting rid of the pulp culture philosophers that we have on TV. Or what I also see is like athletes who get asked questions about things that are like, you know, like, what's your opinion about Bosnia? What's LeBron James? And LeBron James is like, I think we should, I don't know. Like, maybe he has an opinion on it, but like, should we, is that the most well-versed opinion that we should be listening to? And like, we should just be able to have an awareness of that. I think everyone weighed in on that. That was a really great comic, Echocentric Homestead. We're going to go on to Ashley Williams. Ashley Williams says, hey, Ty, you're a microbiologist, aren't you? A man of science. I mean, you have a PhD. When are you guys going to do a show on this COVID vaccine? I mean, what better way to put science, logic, and proof together than that right now? And who better than you guys? LOL, asking for a friend. Oh, that's so sweet. So, so we actually did a show on COVID and vaccines. It was called Can Spiritual Healing Save Us from COVID? And we did that back in November. On the 22nd of November, you feel free to check out that video. Let's see. Another comment is, it's a question. I'm going to direct it to our new guest of honor, Buffalo George. He wants to know, let me read this question. Do scientists only form consensus? I'm sorry. Do scientists ever form consensuses without demonstrability? So basically he's asking, can a bunch of scientists come into a room, come to a consensus about something, but not be able to demonstrate it? And has that ever happened in the past?
Well, I think theoretical physicists do that all the time. and that's their branch of science. But really, there the purpose is to instigate experimentation to prove or disprove. But by and large, I don't think scientists do that. Everyone looks at the data and decides whether or not you should go on from just something that's data driven to a consensus and then to a paradigm.
Right.
But again, the overlying thing that's going on there all the time is it's expected to be retested. You know, a couple of years ago, there was a good paper out on challenging some of Newton's theories. And nice. Einstein's relativity theory was tested a few years ago in the peer-reviewed literature. And in both cases, both of those guys came out okay. But, you know, everything has to be based upon retest.
Nice. He invented calculus at 20. I want to see something like needle. I was like, come on, get him down here for someone. Could you imagine if Newton was in your like math class? He would be like the ultimate teacher's pet. He'd be like, I did all my homework. I did the whole book. It's like, oh, this guy.
But he wasn't one of the nicest people. I would like to add that. He's not my favorite scientist because he was very bad to some of his colleagues.
I'm going to say this. Sometimes people are mean and deserve to get away with it. if their contribution's good enough, I don't care if Einstein parallel parks, you know, every couple of times, or uses the, I don't care if, you know, Marie Curie uses the handicap parking space at Walgreens. It's like, you can get away with that. Like, I'm not gonna hold it against
that.
You.
I agree yeah. with that. However, if it's impacting science, and if it's holding back another good scientist that has a different view, then that's wrong.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. That's why Thomas Edison's in my corner. Like, you're in the bad room corner because he did that all the time. Boudreaux, what's up?
Yeah. So to chime in on what the person was asking of the question and add to what George stated, it's interesting. And I don't know if others have this in their scientific community, but in engineering, you know, I have civil engineering background, and one of the things we do as researchers for traffic safety is something called an expert panel. And I don't know if you guys have this as well, but you get to a case where it's like, you want to study, you know, 10-foot lane roads with a, you know, 8-foot median and this type of shoulder. There's just not enough data to study it, right? So empirically, you cannot put a study together to study it analytically. So what you do is you get a group of experts and you review this and you discuss it and you come to a consensus, and that consensus sometimes leads to some factor of safety that you can use to help design roadways. And that's our statistician friends often look at that as kind of scary and kind of us smuggling in some bias, but you know, what do you do? I mean, I think right now that's the best science we have, and admittedly it's not great science, but it's better than a random number, I would presume, but it's what we got.
Here's where I take slight umbrage. I actually think that's great science, because what you are essentially doing is presenting a model that people can learn from, and you're not saying it's absolute. You're saying, hey, we can improve this model, but that's what science does. It's like, it says, this is our best guess of what things are right now. Let's use this as a model, and we'll look for what doesn't work, and we'll change that in the future. But it's those foundational first steps that really make science a beautiful thing, because it's like, hey, we're building this on the premise of we can improve it. Yep. You know, Scott, you're in IT. Have you ever had an experience where like a bunch of IT guys came together and just came to a conclusion without, I guess, like, you know, hard data to support their conclusion, but they needed to have to come up with something like that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. All the time. Like, let's say if they're trying to roll out something like a program or something that's supposed to solve a problem, and we've never done it before using this program, or somebody creates an application to kind of like update computer systems, for example.
Sure.
And, you know, you kind of decide on a group of engineers are going to get together, and they're going to decide what it should be, what it should look like, what we want to accomplish, and lay out your case. And then you come to a consensus, and then you all agree that this is what we want to do, so let's go out and test it. So then they go and they test it. And if it works, then they roll it out. And if not, then they go back to the drawing board. So it kind of starts off with some imaginary thing, you know, some imaginary, something logical, something that seems to logically make sense. And if it logically makes sense, then they will come together and say, yeah, that's logical. That makes sense. Let's try it. And then they'll try it. And then it becomes a concrete thing. It becomes something we can say, hey, this actually works. You know, this is the thing. So there you go.
That's the greatest quote in like all of science, whenever it happens. It's been said by many people, but it's like, hey, this actually works. Oh, someone's going to graduate. Someone's getting papers and going to graduate. Hey, Larry, what do you think about this conversation?
I think sometimes you just have to do your best and throw it out there and see what happens, you know, and then figure out what you did wrong. And,
That's called improvise and surprise. And I love that motto in terms of science, because like sometimes you just have to figure that out.
You brought up Edison. What was that about?
Edison was just a notorious jerk. Yeah, it's just like a well-known inhibitory to science jerk. Very good at putting his name on other people's ideas and just stealing promoting work. Himself very, very harshly. Yeah. But like, you know, hopefully history will shine some better light on that guy and the people who got overlooked as a result. Right. But Larry, what do you think? Yeah.
Well, I was just
no, because he didn't invent the light bulb. Let's go, Larry. Let's go.
No, I was going to say that a lot of people think that scientists will say something like, "Eureka, I found it," you know, when they find a new discovery. But it's generally something like, "Oh, that's funny."
Then
they I like to say, what do the six controls look like?
What?
Mm. What do the six controls look like?
Control studies.
So but, when I was
there's a distinction between you're talking about experts earlier. A lot of people use expert and authority in the same vein. They have different definitions, and they should people should be aware that an authority may not actually be an expert. And an expert may have no authority in certain areas, but that's something that a distinction should be made. That's all. Mm-hmm.
What I also like about the scientific method is that it has like this almost golden religious, almost it's appreciated at a higher esteem than what it actually is. Cause it's not like one guy being like, I'm going to prove this. I came up with a hypothesis. I did a test and I proved that. It's more of like, I'm systematically documenting every step of this process so that if something, like Larry said, weird happens, I can backtrack, read all my notes, figure out, I expected this to happen, but something completely opposite happened. Can I use that for something?
Like my chocolate bar, it melted in my pocket. What happened there? Which is microwaves came about.
And to tie this into religion, last week I had a conversation with a Christian and we were talking about science and they said, and she was trying to defend faith. And so she was saying, well, even science uses faith. So I was kind of disagreeing with that. And she was equivocating the four core assumptions of science with faith because, you know, the assumptions is there's a world out there. The world can be tested, you know, it follows patterns and laws and things like that. But that's an equivocation because that's just basic inference, not really.
How did you handle that equivocation in dialogue? How did you deal with it?
I just copy and pasted, you know, what science says about the core assumptions. Let her see what those core assumptions are. And then a philosophical, like from the Stanford Dictionary or Encyclopedia of Philosophy to show the difference between inference and faith and different things like presuppositions and things like that.
George, we'll get right to you. I would say like for me, I found it way more compelling, at least in a face-to-face conversation, because this sounds like it would happen like over Facebook.
It was online.
But to ask someone just three questions, these are from like my SC practices, but like, what do you mean by that? Like faith and science are the same thing. What do you mean by that? That's the first question. Let them say whatever they got to say. Let them define it in their own words and not just copy paste from some reputation in the past. Mm-hmm. But once they really think about the words coming out of their mouth, they might change their story. Then ask, how can we test that? Because now they've just given you a claim and you can test it. And then the last question is, how reliable is that test? And through those three questions alone, I think you can get someone to really consider why they believe something that might sound weird to you without having to challenge them or throw out their logical fallacies in their face.
Perfect.
What do you mean by that? How can we test that? How reliable is that test? George, why don't you take us out? You'll have the last comment before we end the show today.
Well, I wanted to
before ask, we destroy Christmas for good, once and for all.
I just wanted to ask Scott, were you successful? Did you change your mind on any? Did you change her mind?
Yeah, she actually did. She
changed her own mind.
Yeah, she said, well, okay, so inference is different than faith. Okay, I understand. I think I understand you better. I don't know if she changed her mind really, but at least she acknowledged the information I gave her because she was asking for citations or whatever. So
very cool. So guys, we're at the bottom of or at the top of the hour.
Top of the hour.
George, I'm going to ask you a question because I asked you this last week and you said you'd look up something. If you say absolutely nothing, I'm going to be sad. But is there anything that you'd recommend that we check out over this next week?
Yes, but I can't remember it.
All right. Work on it. Work on it. I'm going around. We'll go to you one last time. Boudreaux, did you finish that song, by the way?
I didn't. Well, it's still getting mixed, but we should have it. That takes have it soon.
Okay.
No but pressure. I will tell you guys this. In the Christmas spirit, give well. Do some charity, but pay attention to what charities you use, and nice. Find a charity that's effective and get up
absolutely. That's very, very true. Do you have any charities that you would recommend off the top of your head?
Honestly, I would go to givewell.com, and they study all these charities and they find the most effective. It's a Sam Harris thing. I apologize for always plugging him, but effective altruism. Peter nice. Singer, I guess, but effective altruism. It's give where it can do the most good.
Scott Williamson, Dubshine. have you have anything that you would recommend that we check out?
So two things. I would go to an article about what is Christmas, understanding history and origins at crosswalk.com. That would be
nice.
Has a really interesting article about where Christmas came from, its origins and things of that nature. And then two, check out my music. You can download music, go to dubshine.bandcamp.com and check out my music.
Nice.
And things of that nature.
Very cool.
Dude, I need to get a Bandcamp. That's a great website. That's a nice website. Dubshine.bandcamp.com, right?
That's it.
Nice. All right. Buffalo George, anything you'd recommend that we check out over the next week?
No, I guess I'll pass.
Okay. That's totally fine. Brooklyn George, have you gotten the epiphany that you're looking for?
Yes. I've nice. Been looking into what's called cluster B personality disorders. And I want to suggest that if you want to know what's called the dark triad in psychology, actually it's got more to it. There's more than three personality mm-hmm. disorders, but you'll find, of course, one famous person on that map. And there are a couple others, but they may have some importance in your own life. Put it that way.
Nice. Very cool.
Cluster B I'll give personality disorders. Yeah.
Cluster B personality disorders. Give it a Google. I'll give one shout out to my Black brothers and sisters. There's a game that's a Star Wars game. Hear me out. Don't close it yet. Don't hear that. This is pretty good. It is called Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order. I would recommend that you check it out. I think if you buy it on Epic right now, I'm not saying do it, but if you buy it on Epic right now, you can get it for like $10 because it's such a good game and Epic puts out such great deals. But like the idea of if you were disappointed with episode, what was the number of the last two
nine.
Star Wars
number
movies?
Nine?
Yeah, if you were disappointed with number eight, if you're disappointed with number nine, I think if you played like just 10 minutes of this game, you'll be like, oh, I get what Star Wars is supposed to be. Like, I understand the weight of it. I get the world now. It's not spoon fed to me and so simplistic and just, you know, John Abrams explosions. It's like, oh, I can take my time and listen to this conversation. I can see myself falling into this world and I want to explore it more. And I recommend that you check it out. Black people typically not the biggest demographic of Star Wars fans. I say, check this out, you guys. I'm challenging you. All right. Larry, what do you got?
Well, my content is found on digitalfreethought.com. That's also where the blog is, the radio show archives, atheist songs and articles on the subject. My book is called Atheism, What's It All About? It's available on Amazon. If you have any questions for the shows or comments, you can send them to askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org. We'll answer them on future shows. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe to be notified when new episodes are posted. This has been the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life, and we'll see you next week. Say bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.